Hello and welcome to another Woodshop Podcast with Mike Coffee of Coffee Custom Builds, Daniel Dunlap of Daniel Dunlap Woodworks, and Peter Kapar of Petrie's Workshop. You can find us all, as well as the podcast, on Instagram and YouTube.
Welcome to episode 148 of another Woodshop Podcast. We're apparently at Workbench Con. We went to the hand tool booth. We hung out with some guy. We took a couple of gong hits and then apparently promised him to be back on the show. So here it is. Chris Giffro's here.
What up? Woo! What up? Girth bro back.
Girth bro.
Chris Girth bro.
Girth.
He is always delivering the goods. Big thank you to our patrons. You guys are dope. Thank you to Tim Meegan or Meehan or Maigahan. I can't remember.
Maigahan. It's Maigahan.
Maigahan.
Yeah, it's Irish.
Big thank you to Tim for Maigahan. Big thanks to Tim for joining the meh army. You're a really nice person who treats people right. Also, a big thank you to our VIP patrons. That's Alexander Copajohns, Bill Burkle, Braden from Little Bug, Daniel Bryson, Jake Miller, Justin from Calvary Customs, Christian Tung, Malcolm at Bossa Nova Woodworks, Matt Maynard, Melinda Coons, Michael Flickinger, Michael Lydon, Scott Holland, Square Splinter, and Steve Latterola. You guys
dang.
Are dope.
That's so a good list.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I wish it was double the size, but you know what? Intimate is nice too.
I don't know why Girth Bro is making me laugh so
hard. It's so good.
It's a good callback to the original episode.
I completely forgot about that.
It's so good. Chris Girth Bro. It's no speed bag in uvulas. You know what I'm saying?
This is a man that's not afraid of turtles right here.
Right. This is very brave.
I'll take a turtle out.
His bravery is so girthy. Anyway, we're not going to introduce Chris because he's been on the show and now he's a regular. And if you don't know who Chris is,
go listen to the show.
You're an idiot. And you need to go check him out on all the platforms he's available.
Check yourself.
Which would be YouTube, Instagram, his website,
his Wikipedia page.
Girthbro.com.
IMDb.
/Chris.
Rotten Tomatoes.
IMDb. His Yelp page has got some fire reviews. No, go check him out everywhere. Chris is the man. We love Chris, despite all the rumors that have been circulating recently.
None of them are true.
All of them are true.
Every last one is true.
Even the ones that like cancel the other ones out, they're all still true somehow. It's weird. We don't really have like a topic or anything to really talk about.
Yeah, we do.
Like we're what?
Wait, we talked about the topic.
Oh.
Strops.
Oh, right. Why are you putting your hands out like this?
I don't know what to do with my hands. What do I do with my hands,
guys? That's the width of a strop.
That's one strop.
One strop. Yeah, it's a unit of measurement.
It's quite a
Poland.
Girthy strop, if I do say so myself.
It's a girthy bro strop. Right,
oh, that's
there.
The width. The length? Don't even get me started.
Let me hit this button real quick. What's on my bench? That is the signal that we are going to do what's on my bench. Chris, what's on your bench, buddy? What do you got going on right now?
So I am about to start a bed build.
Buddy guy?
I'm going to do, like a Japanese-style platform bed for myself.
Client or you?
Me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's been on the honey-do list for a while, and I actually like sort of roped it into a sponsored build too for YouTube. So I was like, you know what? Like, let me get my free bed and then also make a little money on the side. So.
Oh, I thought you're gonna have her sponsor.
I mean, she's gonna sponsor me one way or another.
Hashtag Girth Bro.
So he's gonna get a mid roll if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that's a solid one.
That's pretty decent, Pete. Good job.
But so it's gonna be White Oak, which is
pop up ads, huh? It's
the
worst episode
ever.
So good. So dumb.
Sorry.
I love it.
White Oak. Yeah. What are you doing?
I was trying to think of banner ads and you work with the pop up ads.
So, I mean, it's all riffs on stuff. It's, you know, I did it specifically for Sean Kirsch, Shaper Sean. I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to make this entire bed.
Right. Just to piss him off.
Out of White Oak. So that should be exciting.
We are legitimately, Sean is coming up to the house and we are going to build a farmhouse table out of all pocket holes and white oak and blow it up on the property. We're doing, that's legitimately a video we're going to do. Yeah, he's going to come up here. We're going to use offcuts. We're going to like pocket hole a breadboard end on into it and then just blow it up on the bottom side of the property.
But make it a Shaper video too, like Shaper something into the table.
Yeah, right. We're not going to associate it with Shaper.
Just like etch like a giant eggplant emoji like right on top and like
or a pocket. Target.
Like, it'll be so good.
That's so good. Now we have to do that. We're doing the eggplant in the traditional farmhouse style.
But anyway, so back to the bed, though. It's, well, so I said white oak. Bed. It's like 90% white oak. The headboard itself is going to be a slab of Norfolk Island pine, which is kind of cool. It's my buddy PJ. He is a sawyer, and he took down, I actually tipped him off. There was a tree that went down a couple houses down. And like, I just called him up. I was like, yo, like there's this big ass tree. Like, do you want it? And so he came over with the crane, loaded it up and then slabbed it out. And he's got some like pretty beefy long slabs. Like one that's like 12 foot. And I think I'm going to buy the whole slab.
Nice.
Use a portion of it for the headboard and then do a dining table out of it too. I think it's just a
nice.
Yeah, I think it's a cool story too, just to be like, hey, like this tree was literally two houses down and now it is here. Like, and
absolutely. You
know, so this is the pine that you're talking about?
The pine. The, yeah.
The pine. Okay. Yeah,
so
what's is there anything, I'm not familiar with that species of pine. Is there anything characteristically unique about it?
Nah, not really. It's looks super piney. It does get some cool coloring in it. Like it'll get like those like sort of like blues and greens, but it is mostly like a white, you know, pine for the most part.
Right.
It does.
Is it like very, not, like, does it have a lot of knots?
It does tend to get kind of knotty because there's 1,000 freaking branches on it. So, you know, when you're just looking at it, but I mean, I could probably get around most of that. I think, you know, I'm actually thinking about cutting off the live edges mostly, or maybe just leaving the live edge on like one side on the top, something like that. Right. It's a fairly straight, you know, live edge. So it's nothing.
How wide?
Yeah, that's a good question. Last, I think it was like 30 or 36.
Oh. So, that's significant for a pine.
Yeah. Oh, it was a big boy. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah. But.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Man.
So that's getting started.
When are you starting that?
Literally this weekend. Like tomorrow, I'm going to start sharpening because my tools are trashed.
Be done on Thursday.
It takes about a week.
Yeah. So yeah, my tools are all trashed from WorkbenchCon. So like I just need to get everything back to snuff and then I'll feel better about my life and myself. And then I can start. Flattening everything's like skip planed pretty much from the lumberyard, and then I'll just make sure, you know, all my components are flat, start doing layout. There's not much in the way of glue ups. There's like the feet for the bed are going to be kind of like a sled foot that sort of runs along the width. I don't know quite exactly how to describe it, but it's a solid board, so it'll, you know, it's going to be like probably two 8-inch boards that are glued together to like sort of like create this like sled foot that runs across the width in the front and the back. But that's it, you know.
By the way, when you're
like a stretcher rail,
like instead of having like four distinct like feet, it's just
right. It'll be like a box frame,
but like a solid board that runs the width. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Now, when you're talking about like it's a, you know, Japanese bed. Design, like, is it the design? Is it the way it's assembled? Because, you know, with Japanese style assembly, it's a lot of like weight. The weight creates the joint.
Yeah. And, you know, so a little column A, little column B. So, yes, like, everything's going to be totally knocked down. And part of that is because my shop's freaking tiny. So, like, you know, I'm not going to like whip together a queen size bed frame and then like move it in its whole state, you know? So, so. The whole thing will come apart and I'll have to like reassemble it actually like in the room itself. So that'll be kind of neat. But it's going to have in the corners, it's a pretty neat joint. It's like almost like a miter with a tongue. And then it's also drawboard too, to like bring the miter together. It's a pretty neat like right angle joint that I've never done. And now I'm going to do four of them. So that'll be,
Sweet.
And
well, five. There's always got to be one practice.
No.
Before. He's going live. He's doing it live.
Yeah, that's not typically the way I do things. I just like, all right.
Yeah, nobody look at that back one corner. That was my practice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, eventually you're like, oh, crap, like this one will be in the back. And then by the third one, you're like, oh, shit, like they can't all be in the back. So, and then actually, so what's neat about this, and Mike, you'll appreciate this because I know, you know, you like your breadboard ends and doing the drawboard and all that. So with these, the drawboard peg is going to be square. So the actual,
oh, nice.
Yeah, the mortise and everything is all going to be like a square peg that goes in.
Chisel through with the, for the mortise?
Yeah.
All square mortise, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Neat. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, that should be fun.
I don't like how breadboards look, but I like doing the joinery of breadboards. I love drawboard. I just love... It's so satisfying when you pin that and it just pulls it in tight. Yeah. I just love that. Yeah. I don't like how they look on tables, but I like doing it.
Yeah. They're fun. It's a really, I mean, it's makes for solid work ultimately. So
it's, yeah, it's great joinery. It's, you look at it and it looks really complicated, but then you break it down to its subparts and it's really, it just makes a ton of sense and it works really good. But the square pegs are going to be sick. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah,
why fun. Are you doing that?
That's like actually really in Japanese timber framing, they don't use round pegs. They just use square pegs.
Oh, okay. It's traditionally square. Yeah,
so that's the only reason why. It's
that's cool.
Traditional sadism instead of regular sadism. Yeah.
Let's make it harder.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it'd be harder. It's probably easier, right? To make it? I mean, making your own peg. I mean.
Yeah, that part.
Round pegs suck, man. I mean, they just suck. Making a square peg is going to be way easier. And then if you're chiseling
but I think
it.
It's like the hole is easier. Round, but
correct.
The peg is easier. Square.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. The hole is easier with the mortise. Is definitely easier with.
So it's
the,
like
yeah,
is,
like because yeah, with
sure. they both have one bad part.
Well, yeah, exactly. So like with the actual mortise itself, the problem is that when you drill it, it's done, right? Like if it's round,
mm-hmm.
it's one step. You don't have to, square, you don't have to do anything. But yeah, with the squaring, it makes it a little trickier. So
yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. That's gonna be awesome. Yeah. What else you got? Anything?
No, that's it.
What about since WorkbenchCon, you know, we didn't get your perspective and you were, you know, stuck at the booth a little for a good amount.
Yeah, you
want to
talk about WorkbenchCon and actually like being on display there and doing your thing?
Yeah, I'd love to get your input and what it's been like since you came back.
Yeah, so WorkbenchCon, and I'm actually looking for my lost AirPod as I just took off my sweater. So that's exciting stuff right now. And I think it's on the floor. But anyway, yeah.
And we're stalling.
Perfect. Oh, there it is. It's in... It ended up in the roll of my jeans. So, sorry, question. WorkbenchCon, what was it like? How was it? So, I didn't really leave the booth much, which was kind of, I mean, I was pretty much pinned in there between Craig and nobody over in that corner. But it was really fun. I think it was definitely better than last year. I think, you know, in terms of like mm-hmm. our session, but also I think in terms of just like the conference as a whole, like the energy that was kind of there, you know, it sort of
agreed.
Like didn't have that.
There was an air of COVID over it last year, like the, you know, because everyone had to test and mask and stuff. I mean, there actually was an air of COVID this year, but there was like the what's the social anxiety of COVID was there
yeah
last
correct
time,
like
very
like,
much so
yeah the
year.
COVID problems were after the fact this year as opposed to
right this year COVID was actually a problem whereas last year it was in theory a problem
yeah exactly
well I think there was some aftermath too last year
yeah but
a couple people
was there oh did some yeah, people yeah. get it last year
yeah. It was yeah. neat though just you know there's a lot of different faces like I've never seen Steve Ramsey there you know in prior years and I've been
yeah for
every
sure
other year Rex Kruger was there he was constantly coming by the mm-hmm. booth actually, so I am releasing a YouTube video on the whole thing. It should be out.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, it should be out Saturday. So, you know, it's kind of cool.
Sweet.
Yeah. Like sort of walks through, you know, all the prep work that I did, like, you know, prior to kind of goes through obviously the show itself and then like a little sort of, you know, wrap up about, you know, my thoughts and feelings on the whole thing. So, yeah.
Neat.
That's awesome, man.
But.
Did you go to any classes?
No. I did not. This is the second year in a row that I've not been to a single class because, I mean, it's just, and listen, I mean, this is what I volunteered for in a way, like, you know, because obviously we have to pitch the class and all that, but I mean, it's a lot of work. I mean, ultimately, so, you know, it's really hard to break away. And this year we were super, like after day one, we totally thought we were in way better shape than we really were. We were like, oh yeah, like we'll be fine. Like we'll be done by noon the next day. And by like noon the next day, we're like, holy shit, we're not going to finish. Like, so, you know, that'd be real embarrassing to have this like, you know, timber frame gong stand that is disassembled that has no hope of getting put together. So, you know, yeah. Just
throw a couple Brad nails in there, well, hold it together for the ceremony.
What was funny was that we were sitting next to the Craig booth, right? So obviously that is the opposite of like everything that we stand for,
right,
and do.
In every room.
And they were looking at us the whole time. And like, I think it was like sort of a twofold thing. Like, one, they were like kind of impressed by like what they were seeing, but then on the other hand, they're like, hey, like, you guys are morons. Like, literally what we do is like, I would have died if they just showed up, say, on like Saturday morning and then just pocket hold together like their own gong stand
with like a timber frame version. It was like 2 feet tall. You know, grab the whole post frame.
Just like they had it all whipped together and they're like, yeah, like, you know, yeah, these guys are still working. We did this in 5 minutes. So, you know, that's it.
Dirty.
Yeah. That would have been like Craig's like ultimate mic drop. But no, it was really fun. It was really cool. The food was way better this year. Jesus Christ. That has been always a, you know, a knock on WorkbenchCon, in my opinion. So to actually have like,
I always think it's too short. I feel like the food just needs to stay out for like 2 hours.
There
like,
was some,
leave it out a little
there
longer.
There was some drama apparently with like the food service this year. Like, they were like cutting it off early, even. They're like, oh, like, we served 200 people. And it's like, well, there's 500 people at this conference. So like, what are we saying here?
Right.
They were like taking away the dessert cart at some point, and people were like, wait, where's this going? And then like 10 minutes later, I see like a new table get set up. I think they got yelled at and they had to like bring it back out.
Yeah, no, there was definitely some shenanigans there, but I mean, yeah, it was fun. I mean, I had a great time, definitely.
So Chris, any big takeaway? Something that blew your mind? Everyone always asks us.
I mean,
sometimes there's something.
Nah, not really. To be fair, like, you know, like, I wished I had something like that. I guess from like talking to other people, what I heard, and this is so funny because it's almost like I took a class, but I didn't take a class, right? So, you know, like, I guess like people were really enamored with like Cam and John from Lincoln Street, their talk that they did on like YouTube, and sort of, I guess, like, hearing about like how they think about like obviously titles. Cam's like a psycho. Like, he'll go through apparently and edit old videos based upon like what he's seeing in like the, you know, his like retention graphs. He'd be like, oh, like the intro sucks on this one. So like, he'll like chop the intro out and then like re-edit a new intro and then re-release it like on his channel. Like,
oh, like post it again.
Yeah. Like stuff like that. Wow. And like, that's to me insane, because as soon as I post something, it's done. I'm like, nah, like, I'm not touching this ever again. But
I feel like that's been a theme with a couple people. Like when we had Eric on, he's revisiting old videos and tweaking them with the whole A/B testing thing. And he's changing captions.
He's not re-editing any videos.
Not
though.
Re-editing.
He's just doing
no,
titles,
but there is like
thumbs.
But the mindset with YouTube is always, you post it, you learn from it, you go to the next one. You don't go back to an old video, but these guys are going back to old videos and tweaking something. Or, I mean, I didn't realize Cam was like re-editing sections of it and reposting
it.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
That's pretty bananas to me. But I know, like,
I mean, just goes to show you there's value in old stuff.
I mean, he's killing the game at like an insane pace. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever he's doing is clearly working.
Yeah. Well, I actually got to meet him, which was fun. You know, also a little crazy because it was at a bar and everyone was drunk.
isn't that WorkbenchCon in a nutshell?
Yeah.
It's the whole thing.
It's on brand.
Pete, you want to go next? Or you want me to go next?
Yeah, I'll go next.
Hit it.
Oh, God, what have I? My biggest takeaway from WorkbenchCon is no. I guess some part of my week is. And I'm sorry, Mike and I are both like running on fumes for some reason. Just been a rough, well, he had COVID. I'm just running on fumes. But as far as like WorkbenchCon goes, I had a really good time talking to all the brands and the other makers, like people that I've been, you know, following for years, some that I've idolized for a long time that I've just, you know, never really got to meet even last year. And this year, all the conversations went so smoothly. I feel like every conversation I had, I like smoothly was able to like get in, talk to them, get out. It was like, it's like I, and then with brands, I felt like I kind of closed the deal with every conversation I had. So we did some follow-up emails this week or last week, and we did some more this week that we had missed. And we're getting really good. It's the first time that in my career that I've ever had like conversations like go full circle and like we're now like working together. And you know, still waiting on a couple of answers from some other brands, but it's looking really good. And I honestly, I owe a lot of that to Emma. Like Emma's been coming on. She's, you know, I think I brought this up last week. She's basically coming on kind of full time. She's going to be working for Peach's Workshop or with me. And we're going to be, you know, she's going to be handling a lot of the administrative side. And like, I was typing up like little emails and stuff to like touch base with everyone. And she took it and basically like wrote like a short, like, it's like as if I threw it into ChatGPT. She fluffed it up. She made it way nicer, used better words, threw in stuff. Cause like we were both there when we were talking to certain people. And she was like, oh, we talked about this thing. Let's work that into the email, and like little personal, comments and little quips in there. And I'm like, I would have not thrown this in there. This is so brilliant. So honestly, she is worth every penny. And she's priceless. No, she's really helping me out to write this stuff, because I don't shine with like writing emails. I'm very direct. I'm very straightforward. And she knows how to fluff that up and have a good conversation and dialogue in there. So she's been helping me out with that. She's been helping me out with some listings. We're also working on, we have a craft fair next week. So we've been working on, I'm just trying to crank out cutting boards and stuff out of like all the scrap in my shop, because I do cutting boards like twice a year, if that, and I make like 30 plus boards and then not do boards for the rest of the year. And I just sell them as they are. I don't do custom cutting boards ever for anyone anymore. You know, if someone wants one, I just tell them like, hey, here's what I have left. And if you want one, go for it. And then I'll engrave it or whatever, you know? So we've been doing that. We've been I've been working with her to try to get some new designs and things done for like laser cutting and CNC. So we're going to be doing a lot of that over the weekend. But it's been really good having like another person that's heavily involved in it. That's, you know, that you're able to bounce ideas off of. So that's been honestly a lot of fun. And coming straight from WorkbenchCon, we kind of really put it out in the universe that like, yeah, she's coming on full time. And then, we both were like freaking out a little bit. She also had COVID, so she got sick, unfortunately. But we, because you know, she was making out with Mike. Thanks, Mike. Tonsil hockey,
I'm a tasty snack.
I get it, but I'm still upset. She got sick.
Speedbagging
about the other thing. Speedbagging
the old you.
Good old tonsil hockey for you Canadians. So yeah, we've just been working on a lot of that stuff. And, you know, Etsy's coasting smoothly, which is great, because last year around this time, I saw just like a nosedive on my numbers in Etsy. So this year it's looking good. We're just getting a lot of stuff designed for next week, getting everything ready. And we're really excited about the projects. We're actually planning out some projects for the next couple of months, like some small furniture pieces for our house. We're going to be redoing our laundry room / mud room. And then at some point later this year or early next year, we're going to be tackling rebuilding the entire basement, because right now it's just a raw basement. We're going to finish the whole thing completely and put an extra bedroom down there or something like that. So pretty excited, a lot of good projects. And with the conversations with these brands, there's a lot more incentive to actually get these projects rolling. So it's really exciting. Anyways, that's what I got. Mike, what about you?
Question.
Yes.
For you, Pete. Did you mention that on the show last week?
Did I? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't.
Well, which part
of it? This is news to me. Emma coming and working like with Petrie's.
So the conversation for a while was like, we can survive on my income from my day job. And like for a while I was thinking about leaving my job and like, yeah, I got to go full time. That's the goal, whatever. But like, what's more valuable to us for like in the future, starting a family and just, you know, with her driving late at night and all this stuff. And she works in an okay town, but like leaving at 10 o'clock at night in South Orange, anyone from Jersey, it's like, it's a little rough. You know, I always worry about her, and it's a long drive. It's an hour away. Lynn City. Exactly. You know. So the idea was okay, she's going to potentially, you know, maybe step away from that and start working like a full-time remote job. And we're talking about that for a while and like, well, what if we just work together? What if she came on and was like helping with the Etsy shop and the other stuff? Because we just have to tweak it just a little more to replace the income that is coming in. Like Etsy's doing pretty well. So if we were going to push that, and she's a beauty consultant. She does makeup for events. She does Mary Kay. She does all that stuff. So she's making her own money as well. And with all the free time she would have, like she leaves at 2:30 in the afternoon to go teach at 4. She doesn't get home till like 11 o'clock at night. four times a week. So she basically misses the entire day four times a week. It's not just like an 8-hour shift type of thing. So the idea was, why don't we, for the next couple months, try having you basically come on a little full time, more full time. And then if this doesn't work out, she just gets a full time remote job. She'll just look for something where she can still work from home. But right now we're never going to have this opportunity where we can have you actually jump on and try this out.
I don't agree with that. You will always have that opportunity.
Like, yes. But as we were thinking, like, you know, we're not thinking about kids right now, but like, as we think about having kids or having a family or whatever, like, it would be great for her to be home and not have to worry about having to commute to a job or, you know, take time away or something like that. So it would be nice to have her closer by. And she's already like just paying massive dividends with what she's been able to help me out with the last couple of weeks. And we're still trying to figure out exactly where she fits into all this. So I guess I didn't really talk about that last week too much, but yeah, Emma's kind of coming on to help me run the show. So that's exciting.
That's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Pretty stoked. Mike, cool, back dude. To you.
I'm recovered from COVID. Well, I'm not.
Yay.
I'm COVID negative, but it's kicking my butt still. I'm like,
that's a positive.
I think I'm just getting old. Like, I just am old now. So, I feel like, yeah, like I feel like crap. Like, I'm tired at like noon. Like, I'm exhausted at noon. So hopefully next week will be better. But
you do get up really at busy 6. Right
now. Yeah, I need to get up earlier than I am. I haven't been able to get on. I've been on my new bike like 3 times, and I just want to ride my new
bike.
Give
it time. You got to recover.
Anywho, we're busy right now. We had this countertop. So last week we were trying to deliver this countertop. It's like 55 inches wide by 124 inches long, all white oak. Riffs on, that's the way to go with white oak. Riffs on is beautiful. But we got to the third coat. I wanted to do 4 coats because it's a countertop, water area. I wanted to get, I'm doing this 2K urethane on it, and I ran out of finish, which is super embarrassing. This has never happened before. And so we had to,
happens to a lot of guys
we had to order
age.
More. Right. So we had to order that up. So, but also I couldn't deliver because the client needed it either last Friday or not until next week because there's a cabinet guy doing work. So we couldn't get it in because I was COVID positive still. So I didn't pop negative until last Saturday. So we couldn't deliver that. That's still sitting here. The finish just came in today. I'm going to finish that up tomorrow. We have this vanity that's done. We built this bathroom vanity for this client, and I just need to spray that with the same stuff. So that's going to get done Monday or something. And then we're working on this dining table. It's like, I came up with this furniture line, it's like the first Coffee Custom Builds, like, furniture line. The whole design is similar. It's a dining table, chairs I've been working on for a while, bar stools, and then like an end table. So like it's a whole set. So I hate the dining table in my house. I hate this dining table. I hate it. When I bought it, I was like, I loved it. I thought it was dope. And then I learned about woodworking and I realized this thing's made like garbage. It's just like a factory made table that's just crap and I hate it. So I've been wanting to replace this table. So I got this dining table basically done. We've been working on that in the shop, getting it knocked out. I'm really excited about this design. I think it looks really nice. It's a nice mid-century modern look, and it'll be done like Tuesday or something like that. So getting that wrapped up right now. We've got a desk to start for this client. And we've got a like a farmhouse style table. It's not like farmhouse style. I don't know. It's more of just like a modern looking table. It just is very plain. There's no, actually, I think there is breadboard ends on it, actually, now that I mention it. But it's all Claro walnut, which is awesome. The whole thing is going to be Claro walnut. It's going to be a Claro walnut top, breadboard ends, but it's going to have a split middle with a leaf. So it's going to have two 18-inch leaves. So it's a 6-foot long table and it'll extend out to 9-foot long. And a bench. So that's going to be fun. And we're doing these grounding boxes right now. We have an order of 30 in right now, which is a really big order of grounding boxes for us. So we're doing those, and we've got 10 of them. We've got 10 of them done of the smaller size and 20 of the regular size. They're ready to go to the client so he can do his thing. He puts a bunch of like magic dust in there, and then we'll get him back here. Yeah, he does this like
magic dust.
Salt Bay or whatever, but he does that, and then we got to get him done by like end of the month, really. Oh, geez, I didn't realize. Yeah, we got to actually get moving because they got to go to this.
You have half a month, bud.
Yeah, I just like started panicking. Like I didn't realize we got to get him to Chicago by like the second week of April.
Yeah, you lost a week.
I lost 2 weeks, dude. Workbench Con and COVID. Yeah, like yeah. Shoot. No, we got to get him to this. They have this giant like audio high end audio convention in Chicago. We got to get them to Chicago by like the first or second week of April. Now that I realize it, so they all got to get crated up and freighted out. So anyway, we're working on that. And then I've been dealing with some like negotiations, which I kind of want to do another class with you, Pete, like where you moderate again.
Hit me up.
I want to talk about like a negotiations class because I've been getting that. I mentioned it in my stories and people are asking, like, how does that look? Like, what is that? I don't know how many people are actually dealing with that stuff in the community, but some of these negotiations are like really high dollar negotiations. Chris, you deal with a lot of negotiations, right?
Sure do.
I mean, like all day long, right? That's your jam.
Yeah.
So,
I watched
you're
Suits
with,
before.
Like the stakes you're dealing with are like
people's lives,
almost human life. Like
yeah,
stakes.
But I mean,
like yours
realistically,
are like
being an attorney, it's negotiating everything ultimately. Like even in my position, right. Where I mean, I do have a regular caseload, but I'm also a supervisor of a unit. Like I have to like negotiate with the idiot attorneys that work under me, you know, about like their right. caseloads and like what they can handle, what they can't.
Don't worry, they don't watch this, yeah. So we're good.
This is exactly the point I was hoping you'd make.
So yeah.
Running anything. So people are, let's say you want to do something like Chris, you don't want woodworking to be your business. You've done commissions, but you do it as a getaway from your day job, which is a very stressful job. Right?
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
I would say that.
I mean, you do it because it's a passion for you. Like it's a passion for you. You don't have any desires to take your woodworking to a... You're doing like a production shop. That's not what Chris wants.
No, like, I mean, if so, I ever got to that point, I think where I would end up is trying to do, say, like, kind of like
studio, one off studio
exactly.
shots.
And yeah. Or like getting more into the education side of things, like teaching, you know, but
that's makes a ton of sense. So, like, to make money running a furniture company, the bottom line is you have to be pushing products out. Like you have to be to make revenue. It has to be you're moving products through, and they're basically in a furniture company and really any job. Like Chris's point was, is you're negotiating all day long. It is a skill that I think everyone needs to some extent because you're not negotiation could be as simple as like tiptoeing through a tense conversation with a coworker or a subordinate or a manager or something like that. You need to be able to handle these situations in a way that you may not get everything you want, but you need to try to get everything as best you can out of the conversation, but also consider the person you're negotiating with. Yeah. Like, unless they're just really bad at negotiating and you can just take everything, which is cool. But like, that's not typically the case. Like if you're just really good at it, you can just like steamroll someone and just absolutely own the situation. And that is possible if you like end up in a negotiation with someone who doesn't know how to negotiate, but you don't want to be that person. Like you don't want to be. So like negotiations get like really hectic. Like I was just in one today and it was me representing Coffee Custom Builds and six other people from one organization. And I'm in there like, that's high stress. That's like a lot of pressure. Like they're all representing their interests. I'm the only person representing the interest of my business. And it's just an important thing to be able to do. And I mean, in the back of my head, coming from corporate America, I knew that negotiation is important. I didn't realize how much of my week would go to that as I start growing my business, like getting into these conversations, I don't know, four times a week.
Yeah.
It becomes like a real thing and it's part of my life. So right now, like some of these, as the dollar amounts get bigger, there's all these things, like there's these liabilities you have to consider, like risk, liability, you know, what kind of gains, how much you're willing to give up, from your cut of things before it stops being worth your time. It's just like all these things. But, what I'm saying is learning how to negotiate is an important skill for people to learn when they're running a business and just kind of getting through life. Like you need to, you know, negotiate with your spouses or your partner or your child or whatever. There's these things where you have to like just be able to like work your way through these and be tactful and talk about things.
Absolutely. So, and actually to sort of touch on that a little more, like I think you also have to like identify, you know, obviously we're talking about, you know, everything is negotiable, right? But I mean, there are certain things that are not negotiable. And you have to sort of have that mindset as to like, okay, this is an immovable.
With yourself.
Yes, correct. Like, you know, this thing is immovable. Like you know, and you have to present that.
I can't give this up.
Exactly. Yep. So, I mean, there's a whole like tact around that. So I think that's an awesome idea, Mike, you know, as far as the class.
Yeah, I think so. Those classes, I think a class like that, it's important and it becomes just like almost a life skill. And you don't really realize that like you're dealing with these things day in and day out and you're like, oh yeah, I kind of am negotiating this thing. This everything becomes kind of a negotiation as soon as you're working with another human being. And then ultimately, really the thing the baseline, the most important thing is what Chris just said. You need to know what you can't give up going into that conversation, because if you accidentally do, you're screwed.
Yeah.
And if you have a company where there's employees that depend on you and you give that thing up and now their jobs are at risk, you've really screwed up. Like, and it's just not an option. Like the well-being of others starts to become on the line with these things.
And or you start eating costs of the job. It's like when you're like, I'll take care of that part. I'll do that one thing. We'll like throw it in, but you don't think about the hours and money it's going to cost you to do it.
Yeah. I just had this very comical vision in my head of like somebody taking your class and like learning all these skills. And then ultimately you end up in a negotiation with them and they like Jedi mind trick you and like use all your skills against you.
They talk my price down. Oh, it's like a client. Like a client takes my class and now I'm making them a dining table for $18.
Mike's like, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't actually think about it like that.
I didn't think of
it
that way.
I can't afford not to make you this table.
They like Shaolin shadowbox you and like all your attacks are coming back to you somehow.
Maybe I shouldn't put this class on. No, anyway, it's something I've been thinking about. I've got another class like written. And I've actually been so tired this week. I've been working on like that curriculum. It's done basically.
Excuses, Mike.
I know. I've had to like sit down and do like a ton of the admin work and stuff. It's just the worst. But this other class is just like systems and processes. Like what the systems and processes I use for my, I talked about this with you, Pete, but like, I have this class I want to do really bad, systems and processes. But I also saw that they had the call for speakers from WorkbenchCon. And I'm like, I think I'm going to apply this year and try to see if I can teach a class this year. I think this year I'm going to actually try and do that. So,
Justin Dietrich actually hit me up 2 days ago.
Diet Rich Solutions.
Diet Rich Solutions. gosh. I
love that joke.
I don't even remember how we came up with that. It just sort of popped up.
I don't know. I just remember laughing for a solid 30 minutes at that.
But so he hit me up and I'm like still exhausted from this year. I mean, you know, to be fair, like Justin does do a ton of work for our session, but like it is a physically like draining on me kind of thing because I have to drive up.
I mean, you were there the whole time though. You're like literally working the entire time.
It wasn't
like
two
that's exhausting.
In a weekend, you were there the whole time.
And then, you know, like I said, I'm driving 10 hours each way to get there with all my tools and all the lumber and all that. So like, you know, he's like talking to me about next year. I'm like, bro, like, can we just like take a nap real quick?
Give me 2 weeks. Yeah. Give me 2 weeks.
But
see, that's my approach with that too. Like even with Maker Camp, there was a whole the maker swap. Everyone made something to like swap Hard with another pass. Maker. And I was like, I don't want to go to this thing with any obligation of having to be somewhere at a certain time or provide something or teach something. Granted, in the future, you know, might change. Like we might do a talk as well or something, or I don't know, whatever. But like, it's really nice going there without any requirements.
So here's my thought on that. Like, honestly, this year I went and it's a great time, but I'm honestly like, I don't know if I want to go next year. And I know I said that like that year, this year about this year or last year about this year, but like, it's a lot. Like, it's a solid 5 days of just a lot.
Yeah.
And like, I just remember like going back to my room at least twice a day and just like for 35, 40 minutes, just being like, this is hard. Like talking to people this much is this hard. And it's ridiculous. Like walking from the, like that bar lobby area just to get to the elevator to get to my room took like 3 hours. Like, it's stupid. Yeah. Like, you get caught up in conversation and it's great. Like, that's the reason you go. It's a great thing, but it is just a lot. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just, I'm thinking maybe teaching a class would be an incentive. And that's assuming I get picked. Teaching a class would be incentive to go again.
You'd but get picked.
So much.
Yeah.
It's just so
and much. And, you know, then your ticket's covered. You don't have to worry about that. So there's all that benefit.
I feel like as much as Chris shouldn't pay like $8,200 on top of getting everything paid. You guys were working the entire time. I was ridiculous.
Wait, did you have to pay for the booth?
No. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, no.
And I mean, you know, not giving out any numbers, but we also, I mean, we got paid as speakers. Yeah. So, you know, like that was.
You should get
like,
paid.
I mean, that was a non-negotiable.
Okay, that's what, yeah. For a second, I thought you had to pay to get a spot.
No. Yeah.
I would have been upset.
But yeah, so like for next year, you know, we were talking about, well, so Justin was like, oh, can we do another bill? I was like, honestly, I don't know if we can top what we did this year. But like,
it's good.
But, you know, kind of the concept was, well, maybe we can actually like have, say, like, you know how some people will teach like one class on one day and another class on another day. Like, instead of us doing that, potentially we would do it, say, as a tandem, but have like two blocks that are back to back. We speak on one side of it and then do a demo on the other side of it, like something small. So, I think that would be.
I think that's a brilliant way to do it.
Just do a like a sharpening class.
That's
like,
kind of.
That's like your. That's like your heart and soul of. I mean, that's like your passion.
You would kill it.
Couldn't you just do that? I mean, just do like a 1 hour sharpening class. People would roll into that.
I mean, yes, but I mean, at the same time.
And then you're not married to Justin, which is great. I mean, you guys are, I mean, Justin's fantastic. I mean, Justin can teach a thing as well. I mean, you guys wouldn't have to be doing a 36 hour straight build in the middle of WorkBenchCon. That's bonkers.
Listen, the same thing happened at Maker Camp. You were building a timber frame thing the entire
literally
time.
Saw you for one free hour. At
I
Maker
saw
Camp,
you for like in passing, maybe twice at Maker Camp. Like, I'd love to hang out with you for a couple hours and, like, have a beer and get some food. Like, not see you in passing. Because you were kind of... The thing that sucks is, like, you're not building it in a center. Like, they were building a...
Correct.
Like,
yeah, we were over at that at the pond over there, the duck pond. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But like, you like
I do.
It.
And then, well, that's a...
You do.
That, so the way, like, the Timber Inn sort of fits in with Maker Camp, I think almost in a weird way creates a little bit of a click going into Maker Camp because, you know, we work with like those same pretty much like 20, 25 people in July and like bust ass for a whole weekend. And then in October, you're sort of like focused back on that goal again. Right. So like, you know, once you get there, like you got your squad and then like everybody's kind of like hanging out. But yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, there is a part of me that like wants to break away a little bit, you know, and that's kind of why I was thinking like, this year was great. And like, I think we got a ton of great feedback from what we were doing, but at the same time, it's a lot. Like there's no way that, you know, every Workbench Con I'm going to be doing a Friday, Saturday full length build. I mean, it's just not feasible.
Yeah.
It just seems like too much, dude.
Reworking what you do into a class that can be taught at a tent or then reworked into WorkbenchCon, a class that could be taught in an hour and 45 minutes or whatever the classes were, I think that's where you would shine because people would get to see you. Because here's the other thing. When you're building those things, not everyone goes over to see you. But when you're in the middle of it or you're in the list of speakers, it's like, oh, like learn how to do timber framing from Chris. And like people will go to that, you know, more than like maybe just like you being at the pond and not knowing that there's a timber framing thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
Because unfortunately, that did happen. I feel like people didn't know that it was happening.
So this is a fun story from WorkbenchCon. One of, like, I forget who it is, if it's Kristen's husband or somebody, like somebody that's part of that family, right, was there. And we were talking to him at WorkbenchCon. He's like, oh, like, you know, do you guys go to Maker Camp? We're like, yeah, man. Like, you know, we did this whole thing. Like, we were there. And he's like, oh, like, I didn't see anything you guys built. We're like, actually, you know, you guys went down to the pond and, like, watched the total boat race from the bridge that we built. And he was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Oh. Like, I'm like, yeah, dude, like this is the whole thing. But yeah, like, honestly, I mean, it's super fun. I mean, that's why I like to do it. I mean, that's why I enjoy it. I mean, yes, like classes are good, but I mean, I want to like, you know, teach, I want to spread, you know, my knowledge to other people. And, you know, I'm a sponge. Like I like soaking it up and I like getting squeezed to let it all out to other folks, you know? So
squeeze it all
over. Yeah, that's why when Mike gives me that big hug, it's nice and juicy. So, yeah.
Post-frame.
Okay, well, this is perfectly on topic as we go right into questions, is. I think. this first question is from Bob Ryan. Fake name, but that's fine. No, he's actually a patron. Thanks,
Rex
Bob.
Ryan's cousin.
Witness protection.
Hey, guys. I just got a job here in Atlanta for a restaurant group to refinish 76 restaurant tables. They have agreed to give me 4 tables every week, but they want those 4 tables back in service within 7 days for regular restaurant use, which means they're going to be getting hot plates, wet glasses, they'll be in full use. So there's no finish that I'm aware of that's going to cure in 7 days. I know there's finishes that would be dry in 7 days, but no, I think that's only going to hold up to light use, not really hot plates and glasses. My original plan was to use General Finish's conversion varnish, the Enduro. But like I said, that's not going to be cured for probably 20-something days. Do you think that will be strong enough in a restaurant case to, if I get it to within a week, or do I need to have a conversation with them and let them know it's just going to take longer than 7 days? Or is there another finish I could use? I was also considering lacquer, which I know will cure a little faster, but not by much. But lacquer's not really going to be quite as strong as conversion varnish, or maybe even waterlocks, which is something I would use in on a regular basis. But again, that has a pretty long 30-day cure time. So do you think this is possible to get done in 7 days, or do I need to have a conversation with them? Thanks, guys.
Is it cool if I take this one?
Yeah, Mike, please.
First,
I was going to defer to you.
Don't use lacquer. It will break down to alcohol. So here's my opinion. If you want to use whatever finish you want, I would recommend this product we started using a couple months back by Diamond Vogel called Elite Pure. It's a 2K urethane, 2-part hardener. Stuff is nasty. You have to VOC PPE up. It's barely really nasty stuff. But we've done our own chemical tests after it is a 14-day cure. We've done chemical and scratch tests, and the stuff is like bulletproof. It's, you cannot scratch it. But here's the thing. So you get the first set in, you spray them, let them sit 14 days. But after that first week, you get the next set of tables in, spray those. Now, after a week after that, that first set is ready to go. All you've had to do is stagger back a week, and now you're just 2 weeks behind on when your delivery is all. So everything's just a week. Your first shipment will be a week behind what they want, but just tell the customer, hey, you're not going to get the first shipment for a week. You're going to get them in 2 weeks, and then they'll be ready to go. But from then on, we'll have a one-week cadence, and then you're rocking and rolling. But use whatever finish you want to use. If you're familiar with the conversion varnish by General Finishes, that is a good finish. I will say that the Elite Pure is more durable than the General Finishes conversion varnish.
How many coats do you do?
In that scenario, the Elite Pure, what I like about the Elite Pure is that stuff comes out hot. It is flashed in 15 to 20 minutes. Whoa. You can get 4 coats in about an hour. I would do 4 coats.
Okay.
And you can get it in about an hour and a half. And you're done. And then you don't touch it for 24 hours. It'll be cured. Like after like 12 hours, that you can still kind of get fingerprints on there. So don't touch it. Let it sit for 24 hours. Then you can flip it. By that next day, it's like rock hard, and you can. So I do the bottom first, 2 coats on the bottom, flip it, 4 coats on the top. You're gonna have to clean your gun, even though it's water based. You're gonna have to clean it with acetone between pots. But that's how you do it, in my opinion. You give it a 1 week buffer, and then you're able to hit that 1 week cadence that they're requesting. That's all you got to do. But so, the Elite Pure is a 14-day. I believe the conversion varnish is a 30. Don't use lacquer. Use a urethane or a conversion varnish. Anyone else got any opinions?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because you and I are pretty much on the same wavelength. So I've used a product called Bristol Finish. The website you can
refer to that.
Yeah, bristolfinish.us. I've used it on a bunch of stuff. It's a marine varnish. Well, varnish, quote unquote. It's a urethane, though. 2-part, right. Same kind of concept. Full cure in a week if you're in a warmer climate. So, there's that.
That's amazing.
And
yeah, that's
it's really
awesome.
Cool, too, because you can do... So the spear gun that I built, which is actually like the biggest...
I remember.
What's it called?
Biggest video
on my channel. I used the Bristol Finish on that. And then I actually just used it recently for a vanity, the Kumiko vanity that I did. The top is sprayed with the urethane because obviously wet, it's going to be.
Now I know where I know the name Bristol.
There you go. but what's dope is like you don't have to sand between coats. So if you were applying your coats before it kind of hardens up, like you're saying, Mike.
As long as it's wet.
But it's not like it's weird because it's an hour that you wait.
It's flashed.
Yeah, it's like flashed. You can touch it, but you might like leave a thumbprint or something like that. But for the most part.
That's how the urethane is too. You don't have to sand. The Elite Pure, you don't have to sand between coats. In fact, when you it kind of looks weird. But
so, yeah, I mean, it'll do it. I mean, your idea of staggering, though, I mean, I wouldn't have come up with that on my own.
That is brilliant to, like, just stagger by one extra week, and now you're on that weekly schedule.
Now you're on their weekly cadence.
But they're down four tables. Like, I think they could survive.
Well, they just have to plan. If they can't plan around it, you don't want them as a customer.
Well, let me ask you this.
Bottom line, they're going to be a nightmare.
I don't have a better answer than what Mike and Chris said, but I have this question, though. I've been to plenty of restaurants, plenty of bars where there is a really crappy tabletop epoxy poured over everything. Would you maybe recommend an epoxy, like a tabletop, like a good job of pouring tabletop epoxy where it doesn't look pitted and terrible? Because that would cure in under a week, you know?
Yeah, I don't like that because of how glossy it is.
Fair.
And it just looks really bad. After, I mean, it will be durable. It's going to yellow really hard, but also like a fingernail going across it, you're going to see those scratches because of how glossy it is. That's for me.
The urethane that you were suggesting, is that like a gloss finish, or do you have like satin finishes as well? Like,
yeah, they have a flat, a dull satin, a satin, a gloss, and a high gloss.
So many choices.
Yeah.
So,
oh, no, I'm sorry. No, it's semi-gloss gloss, not high gloss.
And he sent us videos of spraying that stuff, and it levels out so
much. I mean, all the urethanes, they're kind of self-leveling. But I will say the downside to the Bristol finish is that it is a high gloss, and they do make a satin additive. But I swear to God, you tried to use the satin additive, and I almost dumped like the whole bottle in there, and it's still super damn glossy. Like, it just doesn't satin up.
Diamond Vogel, we're moving all of our film finishes to that because like two of my big contracts, that company moved to their house brand is now Diamond Vogel.
We're talking about that.
And
with the shelves, right? Was the shelves?
Yeah, Room and Board moved the shelves. One of the contracts, Room and Board moved all the shelves to that. But I was already moving to Diamond Vogel. I've been very impressed with their products. Like, and so they have a product called Aquinity, which is a urethane, and it's a water-based urethane, and it's like crystal clear. You can barely tell there's finish. I mean, if that's not a look I want, but there are times when you want a totally clear top coat over some sort of sub, like a sealer. You could like drop a nice ambering shellac down, and then throw this over the top of it, and it'll give the shellac a little bit more durable finish. That stuff is fully water-based, has zero smell. It's like, I mean, you shouldn't listen to what I'm about to say, but I don't PPE up for it at all. I open up the doors to the spray booth, and I don't smell anything. I'm sure there's stuff. Don't listen to me. It's a bad idea. But this other stuff is really nasty, and yeah, they have the full range of glossiness. So, and then the other product that Diamond Vogel makes is called Victory. It's actually the finish that Taylor Guitars uses on their guitars. It's their instrument grade finish. That's what we use on the grounding boxes. It's the high gloss is like the highest gloss you can attain in a water-based finish. It's like a sheen of 90, which is there's not even many oil, like solvent-based finishes that can attain that high of a gloss. It is crazy glossy. To get anything higher, you basically have to build up, sand back, and polish, essentially. And we don't even polish it. It looks crazy shiny. I mean, Pete, you've seen how shiny that. I mean, it's like a mirror finish off of a water-based.
What was it? Because you were trying to get like a violin, like instrument finish.
Instrument grade finish is what we're going
instrument
for,
grade finish. So it's bonkers. Piano finish. With
the Bristol finish, like, so they have an amber urethane that is not water-based, and then they have a clear that is water-based. I've actually never used the clear. I've only used the amber because typically I use it on darker woods. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely something you want to wear PPE with because it just smells like...
You should always wear PPE when you're spraying. Yes. You're aerosoling. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you're putting like marshmallows into the air. You don't want it like, in your lungs. Like you need.
Unless you're like super down with huffing. Like if you're one of those people that just like you know, gets the brown paper
you're just
bag,
spraying
like,
marker ink.
Wants to kill some brain cells. Don't do that, kids. But yeah, yeah, you know, just yeah. So it's urethane. That's the way to go.
Yeah, it's good stuff. The next question is from one young Mr. Daniel Dunlap.
Never heard of him.
What is up, gentlemen? I hope you're having a good show.
He's
without
definitely
me.
In a hot tub.
I got a question for this week.
Gross.
Let's say you've won an all-expenses paid trip to anywhere in the world, but you have to take three of the people you dislike the most. Who are you taking? And it can't be me. Also, fun little extra added question. What is Snoop Dogg's favorite woodworking tool? A chisel. See you next week.
I don't get it.
Boo!
Chisel my nizzle.
Who wants to go first for shizzle my chisel? I'll go first on the... Okay, so the three people I hate. Mussolini, Hitler, and Shirley Temple.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, since Pete, what about you?
Since you took my answers, if I can't choose Dan or you, definitely top answer. People I hate the most. To go on vacation with. Jackman, Paul, comma Paul. Johnson,
comma Paul.
Comma Keith.
Comma Keith.
And what's another J name? Jimmy, comma DeResta.
Jimmy DeResta? You're just naming
We're just going, on a beach. And and because we hate each other, none of us are going to post anything about the vacation on social media because we're not proud of it. And it'll be amazing because we all get to hang out, drink beers, or seltzers with Keith and not post anything on social media, and it's amazing. We can hide our friendship but then pretend to hate each other on the internet like the Kardashians do. And then what was the other question here? Oh, the
something about
Snoop Dogg
for shizzle. It's not a question.
Yeah. I don't know, something spoke shape.
I'm gonna edit out
spoke shape.
Strop.
Chris, who do you hate the most? Who do you hate the most?
Okay, hot take. Stephen Hawking. And
I get it,
man. The worst.
Stand up. Come on.
Who's that guy that hates turtles?
He's just so. Yeah.
Every national anthem, that guy sat down. Rude. Yeah.
He's so smug and he just talks through his computer. I'm just sick of him. He's also wicked dead, so there's that.
Wicked dead.
What if he is ChatGPT?
It's.
What?
Ooh.
Oh, what?
He's like Arnim Zola from the Captain America movie when he like is in the computer.
What a freaking deep cut. Zola. That's wild.
My mailman or mailwoman, it doesn't matter who it is.
Male person. It's 2023. You say male
well,
person.
Well, it alternates. So like it's whoever it is on a given day, but they insist.
They're equally terrible.
They insist on driving like through my lawn practically to like get to my neighbor, and it's like leaving the tire tracks. It's been happening for like 5 years. I'm just
really?
So sick of it. We're all sick of it, and we just
plant some cacti.
I was thinking about getting those like little pyramid bricks to like just like line along like the road.
Just throw painting pyramids out there.
And then the third one would be Benjamin Ueda.
Don't worry, he doesn't listen.
No, but let me actually explain, because this is actually kind of a fun inside joke. No, I don't actually hate Ben Ueda, but so at WorkbenchCon, I was checking into the hotel room, and of course, like right behind me, I see Ben Ueda. We say hello, you know, do our little pleasantries, you know, it's a great time. Then like, yeah, no less than like 15 minutes later, I'm at a table with some other fellows, and Ben comes up and he says hi to everybody at the table, but because we just said hi to each other, he doesn't say hi to me. So then everybody at the table is really confused. They're like, is there some sort of like beef between you guys? Like, what's going on?
Beef? Oh, fake beef, dude. Keep
and I'm
going.
Like, nah, dude, like I literally
Asian
just
beef.
Said hello to him like 5 minutes ago. Like it would be duplicative and weird to do this again.
Right.
And I almost feel like nobody believed me, which also made this weird.
I was like, oh, that's sad. Chris is making up a story to cover why Ben just dissed him publicly.
And I'm like, no, like it's because like we literally just said hi like seconds ago. So anyway. Yeah, that's my three there.
Phenomenal.
Good, solid choices.
Fantastic. All right, this next one is from Kimani, but Strayhorn.
Hey guys, hope you're doing all right. I hear that Dan is away blinding tourists with those pale Nebraskan legs of his. So you got somebody to fill in while he's away. So my questions will mainly be for the guests today. Hey, Chris, we got to talk a little bit at WorkbenchCon, but not much because you were sweating away building a giant stand for a gong for anyone who didn't make it to WorkbenchCon. So a little salty that I didn't get a chance to get my 5-minute photo op to make it look like I did a lot of the work. But you know what? There's always next year. So my question revolves around that. First off, how many labor hours do you think really went into building that? Two, how much sharpening did you have to do before and after all of that work? And three, what happened to the gong once everybody left? Is it at somebody's house in their front yard, or you built a pyre and burnt it for next year? I don't know. And last question, kind of a bonus question. Since I follow you on Instagram and I see your stories, did you choose the meme life or did the meme life choose you? Hope you guys are having a great week. Catch you later.
This is a lot of pressure. I'm going to kind of take these.
Let's go, Cowboy.
A little bit out of order. So the meme life definitely chose me. And really the way I started that was because once I launched my YouTube channel, I downloaded Reddit for the first time to use Reddit to try to promote my YouTube channel.
It's a weird gateway drug to choose afterwards.
Yeah, which actually, was helpful until it wasn't. But Reddit is also extremely thick with 2 C's with memes. So then I got into this thing where I was finding awesome memes on Reddit and then screenshotting them and dropping them in my stories. And now I never go on Reddit, so I just find these memes, wherever I find them.
Organically.
Yeah.
You're now the source. You're what people screenshot and then put on Reddit.
Yeah. So, yes, the meme life very much chose me. As far as, getting back to Big Gong Energy, the man hours that went into it. So I, for one weekend before WorkbenchCon, did all the prep work. So in terms of breaking down all the lumber, doing all the layout as far as marking center on all the beams, laying out all the joinery, kind of making sure everything was nice and good to go on that front. And then I hogged out the bulk of all the mortises with the Festival Domino XL just to make life easy when we got there. Because if there was one thing that we learned from last year when we did it was that was a much smaller build, but even still, raw dogging it when you get there and expecting that you're going to do all this work on site is impossible. It's not practical. We're not in a shop, we're in a freaking conference room,
Right. You don't have your tools there. You don't have your thing there.
It's a whole mind thing. So I was and I told Justin, I was I'm going to do the bulk of the work. So that way when we're on site, all we're doing is sort of finessing mortises, cutting tenons, and then finish planing. So that was really, our deal. And then how much sharpening did I do? So that's an interesting question because, I sharpen a lot. There's some people out there that sort of operate on this idea of I sharpen twice a year and that's good. But I sharpen either at the end of every day or at the beginning of every day, depending on, what's going on. I sharpened, a couple days before I went up and just had all my tools ready to go. And then I only did a light kind of tuning sharpen the Saturday morning, with some of the most used tools that I cared about. Cause there were some beater chisels that I'm just somebody's going to be mucking around with this. It doesn't matter. It's fine. If they want to use a good one, I've got sharp ones over here. So, there was some discretion kind of used there, but it wasn't that crazy. What I will say that was kind of neat though was, so Rex Krueger was bored to tears every morning during the whatever the opening keynote was every day. The first day was Carhartt trivia, so he immediately came over and was like, I don't need this. But then I forget what was going on the second day. He actually sat down. Rex has this fairly large YouTube channel. I want to say he's 300,000 on YouTube, something to that effect. And he was really intent and watching me sharpen. He was asking me questions. It was really, really cool to, you know, see somebody like that, that was like genuinely interested in what I was doing. I mean, he, you could tell like he really loves hand tools. Like he was just geeking out the whole time. So, kudos to him. And then what happened to the gong is, well, candidly, a great question, but what I kept saying, you know, the entire weekend, because this came up a lot, like people would be like, hey, like this thing's really cool, but what's going to happen at the end of the weekend? And my canned answer,
big fire pit.
Well, yeah, like we can do like a Maker Camp style burn, just like, you know, some Burning Man thing. No, but my canned answer was, well, that's Kristen's problem now. Like, it is not mine. Like, so I don't know. I mean, the idea was that, and it is knocked down. The whole thing's built so that you can take it apart completely. And like have it almost like flat pack in a way. So I kept saying like, you know, hey, like this is how you take it apart. Like we, you know, we gave like some instructions, but, I don't know. I don't know where it is. It's supposed to be something that's like sort of like re-erected at every Workbench Con that they're going to use like for the closing ceremonies to be able to like, you know, ring the gong to like close out the show. But whether that is or is not going to happen, I have no idea. I will say like, you know, I have my giant mallet there, that like 15-pound ash mallet. I'm sure everybody saw that.
Big boy.
Yeah. Which actually, funny enough, that became almost like just as big a hit as the actual like gong stand. Like people were taking pictures with that thing, like Izzy Swan.
Because that was there before anything was built. It was just this giant mallet at the stand. Yeah. Emma and I went over there and we were like picked it up like, why is this here? We thought you were going to use it to like get the, you know, the mortises out. Whatever.
Well, that's what it's for. It's supposed to, you know, they're the nickname for them in Japan is the commander. And like, you know, the idea is that you're trying to like, you know, bring large joints together. And so like, that's what we were using with the big, like, what do you call them? The, I don't even know, like the, I guess the brace or whatever. They're like these huge, like through tenons that come in and then like drop and lock. So like to drive that all the way through, and these things are tight. Like we didn't make loose joinery. Like you have to like swat it with this 15-pound hammer, this, you know, huge mallet. And, you know, she doesn't have that. I didn't leave that there with her. So like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how they're taking it apart. And she was pretty nonchalant about it. She was like, yeah, you know, I have boys, like they'll figure out a way to take it apart. I'm like, okay, best of luck to you. So we shall see. I do not know, but I do know one thing is I got paid and it is not my problem anymore. So I perfect. Did I hit all the questions? I perhaps
you did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, yes,
all of it.
All right.
The next one is from Tomah. He's back. Hey
now, yo. French. Get your voicemail. On, go
play. Hey guys. Today I'd like to ask about drawers. I used to think that drawers were a problem and I used to despise them, but then came Cam of Black Clay Studio and I think he is the first YouTuber I saw actually using drawers for fun, increase interactions and growing his channel. Is having drawers the new hint of success? Do you and should I actually try to catch drawers and cultivate them? All right. Thanks. Bye.
I mean, I don't know if trolls mean you've made it, but I think that when you, as your videos get in front of a wider audience, you're going to start getting way more trolls for sure.
Like I'm a little bummed the king of trolls is in here, Dan.
Oh, is that what he is, the king of trolls?
I mean, listen, Dan's been trolling people before it was like...
Well, he is a troll. He's not like the king of... I mean, he trolls...
He literally looks like a troll doll. He probably has like a little gem in his belly button that you can like rub. Like,
like Dan's not a mean... Dan's not a mean person, but like when it comes to like mean comments on his videos, he gets so sassy with his responses.
Well, he just... Yeah, he gets his feelings hurt real easily. I mean,
well, but he also after, like, I mean, gives it right back.
Oh, usually he gives it right back for sure. He goes, he like doesn't stop. Like he hits right back. And that's what you got to do. I mean, you got to use it to your advantage. You like take this comment, you flip it around, you pin that comment, you bring a lot of attention to it, and then you let the general public lambaste them, and it's kind of the best. I mean, for sure, Dan does that very well.
Wait, did he use the word, or did we talk about it in the pre-show when we're listening? Cultivate. To cultivate the trolls.
Yes. Cultivating.
He said cultivating trolls.
Yeah, to like, and that's a I actually love that word for it, because like you use this, you can bleep me here, you use this shit, this manure that is on the internet to grow your channel. Like, use it like you're going to use it in a garden. Like, you angle that, you know, respond sarcastically or give it a sassy comment. Or honestly, a lot of times the community kind of steps in and jumps on that person and responds in their own way. And it's all engagement. It, like, you know, they say all news is good news. Like, all comments are good comments, including the bad ones. Because the trolls, like, they start, like, inflammatory conversations, and that leads to a lot of engagement. And that's what causes a lot of this content to blow up, because they see that people are commenting on it, and it's you know, all the rage and stuff. So I think it's a good thing. And the word cultivate really stuck with me, because, like, yeah, you wanna use that as a tool and not get upset about it. You know, well, like, my video is not good enough. Like, no, it is, because it sparked a conversation with someone that is not as smart as you.
It's like, oh, I remember when you were a cute little troll doll, and then you fully grew into a gigantic bridge troll because I fed you and bathed you, clothed you.
Kept feeding you. Now you've got your own hate channel.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that my audience certainly likes when I start, like, roasting trolls. And I get, you know, a fair chunk. But, you know, would I say that that's when you've made it? Nah, I wouldn't go that far. But you, as Mike had said, like, as soon as your audience starts growing and, like, your exposure, I shouldn't say your audience, but your reach starts growing, like, that's when you're going to get idiots. And I've had in this past year, like, a couple videos. One was a YouTube short, and then another one was a Instagram reel that, like, you know, really popped off in positive ways for me. But man, both of those brought out some real morons. The one that is, like, the real funny one is the one that's on Instagram, which is a 7-second reel. And so therefore, you know, like, reels loop back on themselves. And it's a me using this giant ripsaw, like this old, like, 120-year-old Japanese ripsaw.
Yes.
And the amount of comments that pop up about, like, he's not making any discernible progress, or there's no sawdust. And I'm like,
that's called a perfect loop.
Yeah, I'm like, bro, like, you've been watching this for, like, 15 minutes, not aware that it's a 7-second video. Like, what is happening right now? And
that makes me so happy when they don't get it's a perfect loop.
Yeah, the YouTube one was really interesting, because it was a video of me doing uridashi, which is, like, the Japanese tapping out of plane blades. So, like, it's this whole thing where I'm, like, taking a hammer and, like, hitting the bevel of a plane blade to get the back to become flat. And, you know, Western woodworkers, most of them have never seen this before. And they're like, oh my God, like, it's too much work. Why do the Japanese have to make things so hard? But what I found the most interesting was that, like, you could see, like, as the video was growing, where the reach was, because the comments started changing, and they were changing regionally. So, like, I would say, like, after maybe a week, they're all of a sudden got all these comments about work hardening steel. And I don't know if you guys are, like, familiar with what that is, but apparently they do this with scythes in, like, Eastern Europe, where, like, if you, like, say, like, you take tinfoil, right? And you, like, mash it up into a ball, and you start, like, hitting it with a hammer, like, everything starts compressing, and that, like, aluminum foil can become something that is, like, harder, because you're compressing all the, like, the metal, like, whatever material you're using.
Like, it can't compress anymore. So it's
yeah,
super hard.
So,
or dense.
And that's, like, what I guess they do with scythes, like, you know, with whatever steel that they're using is, like, you know, and so the comments were like, oh, like, you know, 7-year-olds in Poland know how to do this in a field. Like, why is this cool? Stuff like that. Like,
that's part of my,
yeah, I was
part of my test when I was in the,
I was getting trolled by, like, Eastern European peasants. It was, like, just a total shift. Like, but it was so neat to see, like, where that reach was, right? Like, so, like, one day, like, I'm getting roasted by Americans, and then the next day I'm getting roasted by Eastern Europeans. And then, like, it was just slowly working its way around the globe until it got back to Japan, and they were like, oh, nice job. But,
just made around the globe.
But yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, like, One of the things I like about Cam is that he does, I mean, he's just so damn witty about it. Like, he does a really, really good job. But I actually was making this joke the other day where, like, you know, I'm curious, like, how long he has to take to, like, think about some of this stuff. Because, I mean, if he's coming up with some of these retorts on the fly, like, I need to just go into a corner and die because, like, he's just way too witty and too cool. But, I mean, ultimately, what might be happening is that he's just like making the one badass comment. Then he's got like 50 flubs that are also in his comments that he just like struck out on. And he like reposts the one good one in his stories. But yeah, trolls are a good time. I mean, you know, what can I say?
And I know like when I'll be doing whatever, working the shop, and then I'll be like, I'll start seeing comment notification on something. I'm like, I don't recognize that name. And then you'll see another one and you're like, this is a really stupid comment. This is a super dumb person making a comment. Who is this? That's when I'm like, okay, yeah, this post just went viral. Like, that's usually for me. I'm like not paying attention to Instagram. I'm like, what's happening? And then I get like three of the dumbest comments in the world.
It's
I'm like,
not
oh,
like
the 50 post is on the Explore page. Exactly. Yeah, I'm not like the normal group of people. And it's just like some dummy who's like, how does table work? And it's just like, what the heck are you talking about, dude? And then you're like, oh, I have to pin this and this person's a moron.
I thought it was cake. It's not
right. It's like, yeah, it's not cake, but this is whatever. So anyway, yeah, just those are always nice. But yeah, it doesn't mean you've made it. It just means you've got a piece of content that is seeing eyes that don't know what they're talking about.
You got a banger,
or that are out. Yeah, you got a banger, and it's outside of your niche. So
that's how you go viral.
Everything
when it goes to the world, not woodworkers.
That literally is viral.
That's well,
the
yeah.
definition of viral. Yeah.
Or kissing Mike at WorkBenchCon. Like, also viral.
Right. That's like viral.
We just went through a global pandemic. I think everybody knows what viral is at this point.
It's not 3 million woodworkers. No. It's like 30 woodworkers and a bunch of people that don't know what you're doing, but they want to fight about it.
100%.
Yeah, so that's that about. Hopefully that helped, Toma.
Yeah.
Hopefully
use the trolls.
A concise answer to trolls. Our next question is a written in from Max Reed with Redesigned Co. I'm looking into getting my first bandsaw, mostly for cutting spoons and roughing the shape of tobacco pipes, but I'm not sure of the brand or horsepower. Any suggestions would be great. Chris, you just got a bandsaw.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, if he wants to get a Harvey Alpha 15-inch bandsaw, sure, but that's way overkill for what he's trying to do. Like, literally any benchtop bandsaw should be totally fine for what he wants. And I mean, a nice, like, little scrolling blade, something in the, you know, quarter inch, 3/8, like, range should be plenty fine. I mean, you know, nothing too wild. I mean, I think that's such an easy one, you know.
Yeah, I have a little, like, 8-inch Delta benchtop, and I think that's plenty of bandsaw for roughing out these type of items. Yep. If you have no desire to do more than that with your bandsaw, don't waste your money on anything but a bandsaw that will do just that work. If you do want to get into resawing, you're going to want to look at something at 1.75 horsepower or more. That's my recommendation. And you're going to want something that gets a pretty big throat. You want something real throaty. So you want industry leading throat depth.
So you basically want Mike Coffee.
Heyo!
Heyo! There we go. I just set that up for you so well. You're welcome.
Thanks, kid.
No, I mean, Chris's answer is right. It's spoons. I mean, this stuff's what? No more than 2 or 3 inches thick. The material that you're roughing out, it's going to be very small.
Your girth, bro.
You don't need much of a bandsaw. Yeah, you're
yeah, actually, but I mean, as far as like brands, I mean, everybody sort of makes a fairly good one, but I do know that Grizzly does have one that's like fairly cheap that is really
G0555.
Yeah,
they're like entry level 14-inch bandsaw. You can actually get a riser block for it. I'm not gonna throw shade. I am gonna throw shade. The tool company that I hear the most complaints about from my audience on social media.
Really?
Grizzly.
Huh.
However, the G0555, I have used them multiple times, and that is a bandsaw that is like a tank. I think it's like just last. I mean, like Chris just said, I think everyone makes a good bandsaw.
Yeah.
It's such a minimal technology. I think you're really going to have a hard time getting a bad bandsaw from any company unless it says Win on it. That's like the only time you're going to get like a bad
so one. The bandsaw that I was actually thinking of is not that bandsaw.
Okay. Is this an even smaller
it's a
9-inch.
It's like a really small.
Oh, I didn't even know they had a bench top. Yeah, gross. Yeah, absolutely go that route.
9-inch.
Gross. Nine inch.
So while he's looking for that, did you find it?
It's the G0803Z 9-inch benchtop bandsaw with laser guide and quick release, and it also has the little air blowy thing. It's basically like a glorified scroll
that's
saw
slick.
In a way. Like
that's slick. Yeah, that's slick.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. It's adorable. It's kind of adorable. Yeah. It is a grizzly too. Yeah, okay.
$295 Like, and they have sales.
Wow, that's cheap.
Yeah, they have sales all the time. Like, so you should be able to find one, you know, cheaper even at times.
Okay, so I'm gonna aim for the middle with my answer, and that is I had a and I'm not gonna say a specific type. Well, this was I had a Delta bandsaw that I got. It was from the 90s, early 90s, late 80s that I restored. It was the Delta bandsaw. It's the one that you can add a riser on, but it's not that particular saw that I'm recommending. I'm recommending the 93.5-inch blade saws. It's a category saws. They all look the same. Jet, Grizzly. The Grizzly, if you don't know what I'm talking about, look up just Grizzly, the G0555. Yeah, it looks like that, but slap any other brand on it. Jet made one, Delta made one,
Powermatic had one too.
That size, those are great because yes, you can throw a riser on it if you ever want to do some resawing. Most of them are 3/4 horsepower. That is, I think, for most people that need an actual bandsaw, that is your floor. Nice little bench top like the one that Chris recommended. They're great for people that just once in a while need a bandsaw or want one with a thin blade. But if you ever do want to throw something bigger on it, I had the 3/4-inch Delta and I did resaw on it. I put a 1/2-inch blade on it. Yes, it wasn't as amazing as my Laguna now with a 3/4-inch blade on it. And it's like 1.34 horsepower now, whatever. 7.5. Thank you. But like, I think that's a great option to go with. And the best part about it is a lot of these vintage saws, because they're from the 90s, they're from the 80s, they're from early 2000s, you can get these things on Marketplace for as cheap as like $200, you know, if not cheaper, in good working condition. It's got cast iron table on it. It's going to be pretty dang solid. It's fairly universal. A lot of these, you can just throw new guides on it, new belts, all that stuff. They're very customizable. And I highly recommend it because you're going to get that saw and you're going to have it for years without any complaints. So unless you need a big boy, that's going to be your go-to. I don't know. What do you guys think? That's a good recommendation?
I think your recommendation is stupid and ours are better.
Trolls are good.
It's a great recommendation. Trolls are good.
Trolls are good.
No, it's a good... You don't need much to get away with.
Make sure you cultivate the small bandsaw into a much larger bandsaw over time.
Larger bandsaw.
Water it.
Keep feeding it. Hate.
Water it daily.
I love bandsaws. Yeah. I love the bandsaw. It's like my favorite tool.
I honestly, I'm bummed that I had to get rid of my old one. I gave it to my buddy the one that built the big bus that we stayed in. He's got my old bandsaw. I just gave it to him because they resawed a lot of the lumber on it. That thing's a beast. I wish I could have kept it and just kept a little blade in it. You know, for fun, for making quote unquote pipes, tobacco pipes.
Yeah, not having a table saw in the shop and replacing it with a bandsaw was probably one of the best moves that it's only been a couple months, but at this point, it's just so much room for activities.
For you. It makes sense.
Do you not have a table saw right now?
Yeah, that was my upgrade.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Oh my God, how did I miss that? But yeah, bandsaw is a nice move.
Yes. And that is the end of questions. I have one thing I wanted to share. So I released a YouTube video on Tuesday. So it's doing just terrible. It's the worst YouTube video we've had released. So this is something I wanted to talk about, like kind of going back to WorkbenchCon. It's so bad. I'm trying to learn like what the audience wants from YouTube. And this is like me venting also wanting criticism. we released this video. Me and Peter, my cinematographer, we were like so excited about this video. We're like, me and him both work with slabs a lot. We both like slabs. We're just like, we're going to do a slab yard video, how to buy slabs. This thing's going to crush, you know, and it just goes to show like how important, like understanding your, this goes a little bit to the troll thing. Understanding what your audience is actually looking for in your content is so important. And this is a prime example of us not understanding what the audience is looking for in content. like I would say that slab work is niche within woodworking almost. And like we're in woodwork. So woodworking is a small niche. I think slab work within niche. I think a lot of people, especially the people who are consuming content, are mostly shying away from slabs or working specifically with dimension lumber. And it's not something that we realized because it's something we work with a lot and we're excited about it. And the video is just doing terrible. Like the video, it just doesn't apply to the audience. Like the audience isn't interested in how to buy slabs because they don't buy slabs. Like it just would have been a much better video if it was like how to buy dimensional lumber at the hardwood dealer kind of thing. So my point is, everyone who watched it was very, very supportive. We got zero troll comments. That's how I know the video was terrible. we got zero, like there was no criticisms at all. Like the people who were watching it were only people who wanted to watch the video on that content. This wasn't a video that got served up to anybody outside of only the people who chose to watch it, my audience. And as a result, everything was super positive. And
that's how you know it bombed. You know.
That's how I know it's a bomb. Like, besides the views, like, right. But I mean, I'm like, we're like, oh man, this is like, we were both, me and Peter were just like, this
it's
is
It's like,
huge
damn it, this is good information. There's nothing controversial in it. Well, it's just information. Good information.
It's good information. The shots are beautiful. Like, Peter put together these beautiful shots, and it's just like,
well, that's on you. You screwed up.
Yeah, we screwed up. We should have too good a job. We should have thrown a wasp in epoxy.
You know what's so funny? So, two things. First of all, for some reason, this is the first I'm seeing this video. This has not come up on my what's for you, whatever.
No one.
Really weird. But second thing is, it's funny you're talking about like no one's doing slabs, whatever. And that was my exact thought. I'm actually trying to script the video out now. And literally the opening line of the video is like, so slabs are stupid, right? Like, that's the opener. Cause I'm just doing a basic bitch slab table top for a coffee table. And that's my opening line for like, no one likes slabs. All right. So it's funny that you're talking about that, but I actually want to see that because I want to see how you source stuff. So I am your, unfortunately, core audience. I'm not going to be trolling you, but
yeah, you know. I mean, it's like,
good job, Mike. This is great info.
Like Chris, I mean, what is your process going into developing like an outline for like one of your videos? What is your goal? Like my big takeaway from the biggest criticism I got, which was a criticism I asked for, was, well, one thing was get rid of our intro, which we got rid of our intro, which we both... You know, you have to like not emotionally get attached to things. This, we had made this intro. We spent a whole day recording it. And like the majority of the people who are larger YouTube accounts were like, that's really boring. I'm already bored.
You're starting a truck. It's like a vlog. I hate it.
Yeah. So
yeah, that video is
intros are out right now. And it's really weird because I remember, so I started my channel in 2019 or 2020? No, it was 2019. And I remember back then it was like, you know, have an intro. It's usually like a talking head of you, like talking about like, hey, I'm so-and-so from blah, blah, blah. And today we're making this. And then like there'd be some sort of like B-roll-y intro kind of thing. And then you would jump into it. Now, like the way that YouTube seems to push things and what the audience seems to want is you to just like jump into your first cut, like
jump right into away. It immediately. Yeah. Yeah.
I did just start working with an editor, like very recently. So that has kind of changed, and he watches a ton of YouTube and he's worked with a bunch of YouTubers as well. And, one of the things that he's doing is kind of getting me back into little intros, but the intros are like from the video and they're like very quick hit. And then like, I can do like a little voiceover. Perhaps it's just like, you know,
ooh, I like those. When it's like a clip from the video.
Exactly.
Like almost like a preview of something going wrong or something, you talking about something.
It's the hook right out the gate. Hook. It's not an intro. It's a hook. Yeah.
And then another change that sort of happened, and I think YouTube did this without really like saying much about it, but I guess the change has been around for a little bit now. But when you're scrolling through, like if you pause like on your homepage or, you know, wherever you're scrolling, it'll start playing the video, right? So like if you're in some like boring intro that's like doing nothing and a viewer sees that, they're not actually going to click on your video at that point. So, you know, there's so many things to consider. Did you guys talk to Drew Witt at all at WorkbenchCon?
Yeah. I talked to him at Festival.
Okay.
I talked to him at the festival event.
He's a very, very interesting guy. He's very smart, very like cerebral about all this. Like his whole mindset is like, I don't want to make something unless it's going to go viral, kind of. Like that's like what he's chasing is like, you know, he wants to make like a gnarly, crazy viral video. And like his whole thing is like, he's trying to figure out what his audience wants to see. And like, he goes to like great lengths to try to figure out what that is. So like, you know, a lot of questions like, and it seems very basic to his audience, like, hey, like, what do you want next? Like, you tell me, you know? So that's not something I do a ton of, which is probably why, you know, I have a middling YouTube channel. But, you know, like, really, like, those kinds of guys, like, you know, Drew, Suman, you know, like, they spend a lot of time, like, developing a curriculum around what, you know, their audience is telling them to make. Like the idea for me of like my audience telling me to make something kind of drives me insane because I want to make what the fuck I want to make.
Yeah.
So you'll have to bleep that out, Mike. But
no, we don't bleep anything.
It's assumed when you're on here.
But yeah, like.
Yeah, I feel like I talked to Matt with MWA and he was talking about using the poll feature in within YouTube, within the community tab to kind of get ideas. And you. We played around with that. Like we did it. We did a. I did a poll. Like I'd have to pull the poll up. Basically, it was we did this bandsaw video. And I was like, "What would you like to see in a bandsaw video?" Number one answer was jigs. Like 40% was jigs. Did a jig video, didn't do well. And I was like, "Ah, okay." So the poll thing is interesting. So I just have a. I think there's just so many factors involved, and you have to. I don't. There's just so many things. I think the bottom line is like. So, I don't know Drew Witt very well, but literally making content to go viral sounds miserable to me. I don't want to do that. That's just, like, I would like to go viral, but, like, making my content to have it go viral, for me, sounds not fun. And it feels like it feels like I'd be chasing, and it's fine, it works for him. Also, like, Eric Spensley was on, you know, He's doing the thing where he's going back and renaming his videos. I don't know what any of his videos are about based on the titles. I honestly like don't. I'm like Eric's great. Like I really like Eric
it
a lot.
Popped off,
I just don't think. Well, it popped off, but is it sustainable? Like in a few months,
exactly.
What is like YouTube changes the algorithm, which it will. Is that going to be sustainable for Eric? And you know, talking to Eric, he knows that, he acknowledges that, you know, but. I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to do clickbaity titles, but I also am learning, like, I can't do these, like, SEO heavy only titles. Like, they can't be like, bread and boards on a table. They need to be like, there has to be some sort of hook, but it just can't be so clickbaity for me. I just
so
can't
Michael,
do it.
Like, I don't know if he's still doing this, but for a while, what he was doing was he would have, like, the clickbaity title and, like, sort of the clickbaity thumbnail for, let's hypothetically say, a month, right? And, like, so sort of get, like, you know, get that quick one out so you could do it for longer later kind of thing, you know, like, so he would have that. And then like once it sort of run its course through the algorithm, switch it. So that way, then it's more primed for search. Yeah.
SEO.
I mean,
yeah, I'm looking at Michael's. It doesn't look like he's doing that. I mean, his titles are. I would not categorize them as clickbaity, but they definitely grab my interest. Like that's the thing that's like, I think that's the sweet spot with things right now is like, well, obviously Eric's blowing up and he's doing straight up clickbait. Like he's purposely not spelling words correctly. Like he's doing YOUR instead of YOU apostrophe RE. You know, he's like doing that on purpose, like to make people mad. Like he's immediately like trying to incite
rage,
ire.
Yeah. But this is the equivalent of like growing on shorts and like your channel's blowing up because of shorts, but then like that's not your core audience. So that's what he's doing is he's blowing up, but that's not his core audience. We talked about this with Keith
now it is his core audience. Like if Keith said, he's like, dude, just, but no, but it's not good though.
Keith
did shorts and now 66% of his audience is all from
his
India,
metrics are all
and he
off.
Can't get ad revenue. But now that is his core audience, and he has to spend a lot of time.
Because when he does his core videos, they're not doing well because they're not shorts. They're right. not like these quick little quips. There are these long form videos with his humor.
It's just tough.
We all know Keith is not funny, right, Keith? He's not funny at all.
It's tough because like you know, it just doesn't work. I mean, this sounds like I'm an old codger, but it just doesn't work like it used to. You know, like it doesn't push you to your subscribers the way that it used to. You know, like I would say, like if I have a video with say 3,000 views, like probably the amount of that, like out of my subscriber base is like 500 views. And my subscriber base is like 15,000. So like, you know.
It's basically using a sample of your core audience to decide how it wants to push to the rest of the world, essentially. And if it does well amongst your audience, then it's like, generally speaking, this will do well amongst everyone. So yeah, you're like getting a small portion of your actual audience are the determining factors to how your whole video does. So it's tough. Like it's a thing. You have to think about all that stuff. And like Witt is, like you're saying, Drew Witt is thinking about that stuff. John is thinking about that stuff. But then you have someone like Jason who isn't thinking about that stuff and he just crushes everything he touches.
Yeah.
So. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people don't give Jason enough credit, like for how deep he thinks.
He's very calculated. He's incredibly. He's very calculated.
You know, like he just plays a moron on TV kind of, but like, you know, especially like when it comes to like his storytelling and stuff, like, you know, he's, I remember like just the first time, like, you know, like I never really watched his content, right, for a long time. And then like after speaking to him, I was like, well, shit, like now I got to see what this is all about. And I was really blown away. I was like, this is clever. Like, you know,
I think the thing is, though, and I'm not very, I want to be very clear, like, I don't think he doesn't care about any of that stuff. I think he builds what he wants to build, and he just, there's just, he's got this thing. He has this, it's something about
him. There's no word for it.
Always, right, he just has it, whatever it is. Here, I mean, obviously, for him, takes it
doing
very
whatever
seriously.
The F he wants to do. And that attitude of I'm going to do whatever I want, I'm going to have fun with it, and you guys are just coming along for the ride, we love that. And he's very lucky with that. Like, we just love him at his core.
Well, and I think it's this is also maybe to you guys' point. Like, if you think about, like, the biggest videos that sort of, like, got him going, like, say, like, The Tank.
The Tank.
You know, stuff like
the
that.
Tank.
Like, and he's continuing that, but not obviously with a tank, but as you said, he's building what he wants and he does it in an entertaining way.
Different scale, but it's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same attitude. It's that big goofy energy through all the builds. So you know the consistency is Jason. That's the consistency. You know what you're getting in every video, and that's Jason every time. And he definitely cares about what he's putting out. Like that he's not like an idiot at all. He's a hardworking guy. Yeah.
And very like, say, clearly, you know, working with somebody like Jonathan Katsmoses, like, you know, I see, like, you know, with the charity, I'm not obviously like super involved on his YouTube side, but he's always like chit chatting me up about stuff. And like, you know, one of the things that I've seen with him is that like he's so heavy on like the like trappings, right? So like, obviously, he did like say the Saw Stop video, you know, where they had like the super slow mo crazy footage, like, you know, all this stuff. And like, he's then taking that, like, what was successful out of that video and like tapping it in and everything else. So he's about to do, you know, we were sort of talking in the pre-show a little bit about the whole stropping thing, but he's going to do a video with Sumon on, you know, the benefits of stropping or lack thereof. And the man's got like $3,500 in gear that he just purchased just to do the video, you know, for that specific purpose.
Right.
And that's something he's sort of done with the other videos, right? Like the kickback videos and all these things. Like, you know, there's some sort of like technology investment into it to be able to create data, to be able to then convey that to your audience who wants to take that in. There's, you know, it's whatever works for you, right? So like in his opinion, that's what's working for him. And, you know,
well, that's what Jonathan's audience wants.
Yeah.
And he knows what his audience wants. And that goes to the very point of Mike, the start of this conversation was, we made a video that my audience did not want. And we were so sure that we were pumped. We're like, this video is going to crush, high fives between me and Pete. And then it didn't, because we're like, that's not what they want. And we our channel is so small. I mean, we only have like 13,000 subs. We don't even know how to pull from our own audience to get answers, because we a lot of there's probably like a, I would say, because the carryover from Instagram to any other platform is just trash bad.
It's so bad.
So I couldn't even tell you like what the translation is from Instagram to our YouTube. I would guess maybe 3,000.
It's minimal.
Maybe of 103,000 followers on Instagram or whatever. I would guess.
We have between the three of us over 300,000 subscribers on Instagram. We just barely crossed 1,000 subs on a podcast channel. Like that's the translation, you know?
Yeah.
It's minimal. People aren't leaving the platform. That's the problem.
Like here's a funny thing too. So, I saw a YouTube video about this a while ago where if you were say like the whole thing actually on this YouTube video was like trying to, I think it was like by TubeBuddy or vidIQ, one of those where they were saying to not stop trying to drive traffic from your stories in Instagram or like on other platforms to YouTube. Like just say, hey, I have a new video that's out. Go over there and like watch it, you know? And the reason behind that is because what it does is it uses the in-app browser that pops up. You're not logged in.
Which is useless.
You're not going to sign into that. So then assuming that person is a subscriber of yours and has watched it, like then they move over and like the cookie on the phone or whatever is all like, oh, like they've already watched it. It's not going to push to them. It creates this whole sort of trickle. And then now you're in
Jackson stats.
And now you're in a problem where it's like, okay, like these people that are my supporters, the people that actually care about me aren't watching my video according to YouTube, although they actually are watching your video. And now it's not pushing your content anymore.
Right.
So it was just this whole thing. So I actually stopped doing it. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
I think Brad Rodriguez actually mentioned that exactly when he was on the show once. So, I mean, I'm actually guilty of it. I need to stop doing that. I've been doing that and it needs to stop. So, I think when we released the first video with Peter and I didn't tag a link to the video. I tagged a link to my channel. And since then I've stopped, I need to get back to that, but I would say, hey, we got a new video available, but again, it still opens in the browser. So,
I mean, I've seen the metrics when I even link the pre-show for the podcast, the amount of clicks is just minimal, abysmal. So like, what's the point? I do it out of habit, but it's like, you know,
probably need to stop.
Probably should stop.
Yeah.
Go find us. You know where it's at.
Sorry. That was a long.
No, this is great info, though. I know this is much longer than we were planning to go, but this tail end, I know, me too. But this tail end of info is really, really good. Chris, thank you so much, dude.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for letting me force my way back on here. So that was nice.
No, that's fine. Come on anytime, buddy. Anytime that you force us to do it.
We will be back. Oh, possibility I won't be here next week.
We have a bench.
We'll know. I might be heading up to Oregon to go to a Maker event up there and something else. So anyway.
Chris, you effed up because you're on the bench now. Like, sorry, bud.
Yeah, you're guest host
now. Like, you're going to be just told.
I won't be here next week because I'm going to Ireland. So, you know.
That must be nice. Well, top of the morning to you.
That's super fun. That's exciting. But either way, another Woodshop podcast will be back next week. Who knows who will be on the show next week? We'll figure it out by then. Just join us next week and we'll figure it out. Check everyone out on YouTube. Pete's not going to put any links in the description.
No,
you're just going to go there on your browser
or
your app
yourself
and check out everyone's YouTube. Go to check us out all on Instagram and Facebook, TikTok, wherever you find things like that. Anyway, everyone have a great week. I will have this episode up Saturday.
Saturday.
For patrons and then Sunday for everyone else. So everyone have a good week. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. Bye.